Anything that we haven't chatted about today that you maybe take a breath and think about that we should talk about?
We did talk about substitution and interchangeability. I think that is the biggest concern that most people have. We haven't really talked too much from the patient's perspective. I think one of the important things that I've always recommended, and we have that at our center, is a patient advocate as part of the P&T committees so that they understand that, look, this is not just some people sitting behind closed doors that are counting, you know, the numbers and the dollars and making the decisions to the detriment of patients. And it's equally important for the patients to understand what we discussed today regarding the fact that, oh, by the way, if I'm giving you the reference product, I'm giving you cycle one today. When you come back for cycle two, 3 weeks from now, it's going to be its own biosimilar. It's actually going to not be the same drug. It's going to be biosimilar to what I gave you today with the same name. And therefore, a biosimilar that's regulated should be no problem. You should be comfortable with that. And I think that I also like to emphasize the fact that the government agencies that look at this have been very rigorous with this. You know, that's probably why we're behind Europe. They've been a lot more conservative. It's not easy to get through the system. That's why also I think they're more expensive, because there's more hurdles to cross here. So I think we should emphasize the fact that the regulatory agencies here are really quite diligent about how they approach this. This is not something where, you know, someone just does some simple studies and gets approved. The other thing I think we should talk about, which we didn't mention, is the Me Too biologics. I think there's a lot of confusion about that. So for example, China right now, I heard, is going to have 5 anti-PD-1s approved, all made in China in the next year or so. And they'll be using them for all these indications in different cancer types. Now, that's not a biosimilar. Those are Me Too biologics, where Chinese companies are making their own biological products with whatever process they use that they think is similar to the reference product. But it has not gone through the same process that the U.S. government agencies require the companies to go through to show biosimilarity. So it's not the same thing. So when you talk about Me Too biologics, and there's lots of those out there, especially in foreign countries, they're not the same as biosimilars, which have to go through this very rigorous process in the U.S.
That's really interesting. What about biosimilars outside of oncology, outside of cancer treatment?
Oh, there's plenty of biosimilars outside of cancer treatment for rheumatoid arthritis, for example. Infliximab, there's a biosimilar out there. And once again, very expensive agents. And it's interesting because these drugs are also crossing over into oncology because, for example, for the toxicity of immunotherapy, we use infliximab for severe diarrhea now, which is great. But I think with these biological agents, you're exactly right. This is not restricted to cancer. There are biological agents used in cardiology and rheumatology and gastroenterology and neurology, and they're all being developed more and more. And I think we will see biosimilars there as well.
Subsequent to these interviews, on November 28, 2018, the FDA approved the first biosimilar for rituximab for the treatment of adults with CD20-positive non-Hodgkin lymphoma as a single agent or in combination with chemotherapy. Additionally, on December 14, 2018, the FDA approved a second trastuzumab biosimilar, trastuzumab PKRB, for patients with HER2 overexpressing breast cancer. This concludes our program. Special thanks to our faculty, and thank you for listening. This is Dr. Neil Love for this special program on investigator perspectives on the development and utilization of oncologic biosimilars.